We buy it. See you around.
Yeah.
Get the brand in.
Hey, yeah, what's going on, you man?
Perfect.
See you later. Nicely.
We've got here with us today, we've got Lyndon, the founder of Eatup. I had the pleasure of meeting Lyndon when he came into my work and we did a sandwich making event. And today what we're going to run through is we're going to run through Lyndon as a CEO. We're also going to run through his journey and his accomplishments and what's upcoming. So would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. My name's Lyndon. I'm the founder of Eatup. And just to explain what we do at Eatup, it's a simple premise. So we provide free lunches to disadvantaged school children who would otherwise go hungry at school. It all actually started in Shepparton, my hometown, country Victoria, nearly 10 years ago in 2013.
Amazing. And for the people that don't know, this is going broadcast into the UK first.
Yeah.
So would you like to just explain how it started and the inspiration behind it?
Yeah, absolutely. So probably just as a little bit of a precursor, the lunch system's a little different here in Australia compared to the UK. So rather than, I guess, school kids getting lunch at school through cafeterias or the like, kids will bring lunch from home that their parents will prepare. And largely that works really, really well. But unfortunately, there are some kids in a tough position where if their family's under really difficult circumstances, they're arriving at school without food from home and come lunchtime and missing out. And I really had no idea at all that was the case until I read a local newspaper story in Shepparton. So Shepparton, it's a country town, sort of medium-sized country town, I suppose, in Victoria, the state of Melbourne, and the same state, Victoria, as Melbourne's in for the UK listeners. So it's a mid-sized town, and I just read it. I was really surprised to learn of kids in that circumstance in a country as fortunate as Australia. And when it's happening in your own hometown, it's sort of that medium-sized town, I just thought, look, if I didn't try and do anything to help, it would perhaps be unlikely that circumstances going to change anytime soon for these kids. And it wasn't anything grand by any means that I did. It was just like, look, if these kids don't have a lunch, what if I did something really simple and made them one myself at home and dropped them in? That's all it was. So that's how I got started.
So it started from sort of seeing what's going on around you and put yourself forward to put yourself out there to help other people.
Yeah.
Off your own back completely.
Yeah. And again, like it was just literally making some sandwiches in the kitchen at home. But I suppose I always had this aspiration to try and help, to try and contribute. I was really lucky growing up to not have that be my circumstances. And Shepparton itself, it does have people who are doing really well, but also people who are doing quite tough. And it's just purely sort of like which of those sort of circumstances you're born into or grow up. And I always wanted to try and help if I could. And being a sort of young man at the time of when Eatup began, I never had any sort of real expertise or financial resources that I could contribute, say, in the traditional ways of donating, you might think, or offering a skill set. But in this instance, something as simple as making a sandwich, that's something I could do. And it was literally just taking what I could from my mum's cupboards at the time, buying a few extra loaves of bread and cooking up 100 sandwiches for both of those two schools. That's how it got started.
Amazing, amazing. So what Lyndon just spoke through there is something which we did at our workplace, a very well-known food tech company. He came in and we made 100 sandwiches.
I think it was 1,200 or so. It was 1,000 plus. We smashed through the four-figure mark in 60 minutes, mind you. So
60 minutes.
Very swift.
Yeah, it wasn't any 60 minutes making over, it was a 60 minutes sandwich making. So that's sort of what Eatup do, and that's how Lyndon started it. So more about the company then. When did you decide you'd set up the company and where did you see it going from there?
It was in its infancy. I never anticipated that first delivery would be a really pivotal change in certainly sort of my life or trajectory. It never began as a career pathway. It was just a simple response to this particular article and trying to help the school. And it was really when the schools called back fairly shortly after saying, hey, that's great, we appreciate it, but can we have some more sandwiches, please?
Okay.
Like, that was truthfully when I thought, okay, we're going to have to find an ongoing way. And I started to research more broadly the issue of kids missing out on food in Australia. And there was a statistic from Food Bank Australia, which is the largest food charity in the country, Australia. They found through their research there's in fact 1 in 8 Australian kids arriving at school hungry every day.
Wow.
So that's when it's like, okay, if we're going to have any sort of significant impact, not only does it have to become ongoing, become sustainable, it has to become scalable. And that's when these first sort of seeds started to embed themselves. I was like, you know, finishing my uni course.
Oh,
so even then, it was really 3 or 4 years in, it's like, I was just buying ingredients, getting some help from family and friends. Like, I might have had a local Thai restaurant, and we'd move from the home kitchen into the kitchens there, and got some help from the apprentice chefs in the local area to get the local TAFE, which is like a training type school. And then sort of it started to grow a little. I spent some time living in Bendigo as well, and became aware of some schools there. So it sort of really organically sort of replicated itself and started to get bigger. And then eventually we probably got to a stage we had probably like 20 odd schools. And so it was quite a big undertaking, you know, and doing that with uni and part-time work.
It was a lot
to juggle. So it was rapt to do it. But eventually we were lucky to engage like with some pitch events and meet some funders where it's like, hey, like what you're doing is great. It's clearly having an impact. What would happen if we could support you to do it full time? We had a van, what would be next? And then that's when we really started to scale quickly, was getting that first van, being able to dedicate myself to it full time, engage with more volunteers, start to bring on an amazing team and just to accelerate forward. Like I said, it's nearly been 10 years, so way back now. But we support over 650 schools across Australia. So through Victoria, New South Wales, Queensland, Western Australia, and the Northern Territory.
Wow.
And have ticked over 2.2 million lunches made and delivered since we first started, which you've contributed to. So big thanks to you for that.
You're welcome. Well, that's a major accomplishment. I can say, firstly, I don't know any other companies doing something which you're doing. In the UK, we've got football player Marcus Rashford.
Yeah, incredible. Go ahead.
I am a Liverpool supporter, but unfortunately, I'll take my cap off to Marcus Rashford. Yeah. So, as everybody knows back home, he does a campaign which he's doing something similar with kids around Manchester and London, I think that.
Yeah.
Where kids aren't eating, they're up from school hungry, and he's actually providing his own charity of food to these kids. He's donating 10% of his wages, if I'm right, correct me if I'm wrong. And that for me is a great sort of initiative taken. And I feel like a lot of these high paying professional athletes or sportsmen, sportswomen should be doing the same, something which is inspirational and needed in our community. What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. Marcus Rashford, an absolute inspiration and what an amazing footballer, but an even better human being in that same time, isn't it, given how great he is on the field. But I think like sports people, they're such heroes to young people and everyone really. So they've got this enormous influence and scope to be able to contribute and engage. And that's not just, you know, say directly themselves, whether it's through donating, but influencing the broader public to start to engage with these causes, and whether it's giving their time or donating goods or equipment.
Yeah.
So I think there's an enormous opportunity there. And there are a lot of inspiring examples. Like you look at what LeBron James has done and Serena Williams, there's heaps of inspiring examples, and it's great to see it becoming more and more common as far as like professional sportsmen and women go. So yeah, I'm a massive sports fan, so always look to that area for inspiration and in every respect, but certainly in a giving philanthropic sense, there's lots of inspiration there from them as well.
Yeah. So what's your goal to sport?
I grew up playing a lot of soccer, I guess we say here in Australia. Football for those listening abroad, but like AFL, which Aussie rules, you know, Formula One, like whatever's on UFC. I like big sports fans, like Australia's pretty sports fan, as you've probably gotten a hold of pretty quickly. So yeah, I love sport, and even like we touched on there, I think sport has enormous capacity to engage from this sort of social. It's a global language. It's a
platform.
Yeah, it really is. So like in terms of E-up or causes looking to sort of change things for the better, I think there's such exciting opportunities to engage with sporting clubs and teams and athletes to improve things.
Brilliant. And do you see anything on the horizon of maybe working with any sports teams, any sports brands, just to get them on board, because they've got the platform to, you know, reach more people than what the normal person has?
Certainly, they sure do, and to scale and impact. So we've had the good fortune to work with professional sporting clubs and clubs already. So we've worked with the Brisbane Broncos, which is a rugby league team in Brisbane, which was amazing. We've had events with North Melbourne AFL club here in Melbourne. We've worked with the UFC when they've been touring through Australia, which has been amazing. We've had a couple of events with them. Wow. So it's a great way, firstly, to make a lot of sandwiches, just as we did together here. But also, you can imagine commencing in a new area, and they've got such broad reach through their social channels for other businesses, the general public to see, like, hey, I would love to do that. It's a very accessible volunteering opportunity, which is the hands-on volunteer Sam has made them. So it's really influential from that respect as well. So we love to engage more and more. And whether it's touring musicians, like the events we do, we host them on site with the group who are taking part. So it's very flexible about how to work with different sort of people. So we look forward to hopefully a few more events like that coming up in the future.
Amazing. So if you're watching this, guys, we will share all Lyndon's socials and himself and the company. And it'd be great to get in touch, maybe drop a few questions, and we'll answer them anytime. So moving forward then, touching back on the UFC, how did you manage to get in touch with the UFC? How did that come around?
It was just a bit of a long shot. Like, I've always kind of tried to leverage, whether it's LinkedIn or other sort of Instagram social network platforms, when an event like the UFC, when they're coming through town and, you know, hey, they might want to engage with the local community and host an event. So just really reaching out, saying, hey, I'm a big fan, we're doing this work locally to impact kids in a tough spot. It would be amazing to have the opportunity to work together. It's a fast activity, 60 minutes, like, you know, it's fun. And yeah, they were so lovely to be able to work together. So initially it was for UFC, I think it was 193, was the Ronda Rousey Holly Holm at Marvel Stadium. So we worked with them then, and we also worked with them at what was at that stage, I think it was the Whitaker Adesanya card as well. So we worked that, so on that card. So that was another really exciting one. So they've been amazing. I mentioned to you briefly earlier, I was also able to visit the UFC headquarters in Las Vegas, sort of learning and growing over there. So it's been awesome. And they do a heap of really special work in the community whenever they travel around, which they do a lot, of course. So they have been a great organization to be able to engage with and sort of spread the influence that they have as a sporting club.
Amazing. And for me, seeing that, it's great to know that you've got these huge brands, well, the UFC especially, on board with you guys. And that just kind of puts it into perspective for the people that this is a very serious competitive sport. There's a lot of money involved. And it's also, for me, one of those ones where it's a combat sport. So it's not sort of the mainstream football, rugby, and people do get hurt in there. Mm-hmm. Now, the persona around the sport is for adults only. But for me, I feel like there's an age group around that it can target a bit more. And we are seeing with the gameplay, especially myself, I play a lot of UFC in the gameplay. And I just feel like it's a great initiative that they brought that forward, because, you know, that's helping the kids, really. So what are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, I think you're right. UFC is certainly not to everyone's taste, and you've got to sort of respect that naturally. But there's a lot of lessons through watching the athletes compete and to be able to engage with them and see how much they dedicate themselves to their craft. The influence they set in the community, the discipline that martial arts brings from a very young age. So I think to look to it for the lessons in that respect is so much anyone can really sort of take from it, and certainly just myself as an individual, certainly having competed, to terrify to step into the octagon. But
I'm more of a boxer myself. I've done a few fights. I've got one coming up on September 22nd live stream. I only done three, but mainly I got into it because a lot of the people where I'm from back home, professional boxers. So I've done a few university charity matches in Newcastle, won them all.
I'm really
big into sort of the combat sports, because I feel like it's a lot of discipline, like you say, a lot of training and dedication. So that's just sort of what I do in my spare time. And knowing that the UFC, you've been helped and you've traveled some space with, and that for me is amazing. And hopefully something which we could do maybe sometime down the line.
Mate, I'm sure you could. You could speak on that even better than I, given your history in the combat world. And I've certainly no one they would see their email arrive and be like, who is this guy? So they were very open to engaging with causes and people and spreading the nature of their work. So I'm very confident you would be able to engage and have some great chats.
Amazing. That's great. So what is a day-to-day in the life of Lyndon then? And what's a day-to-day look like for you?
Yeah, even more broadly in terms of what we do, it's the combination of the sandwich making events and then delivering directly to the schools. That's really the heart of what happens, is working with volunteers. We're giving their time to support these schools. So we deliver, as you know, a very simple cheese sandwich, which we deliver fresh but in bulk to the schools. The schools then freeze them when they arrive, and that gives control to the teachers at that school to be able to identify the kids in need, distribute to them in a way that's sensitive to any potential embarrassment, And I'll generally toast those sandwiches up. So the Humble Gem Toasty is the go-to. So that's really what is the most important is always the impact for us. But I guess more broadly now for me, it's looking to advocate for the nature of the cause, the nature of the work we do, to be able to think of how do we continue to innovate to even better support the young people and the families we look to help. So
yeah,
a really central guiding question for us is always how best can we help? Asking the school to teach us that. And naturally, we had to be agile through the period of the pandemic and change our offering. You can imagine a large hands-on group volunteering activity and something that's distributed daily at schools is not suited when kids are learning remotely. So we shifted very quickly on the response of schools to provide these larger food boxes filled with fresh fruit and veg and cereal and bread and muesli bars and pasta sauce, all sorts of things. Now we're back to our core offering, but we're always thinking, you know, what more can we do? What more can we learn? We've got like this amazing volunteer support, this ability to prepare food and a logistic capacity to deliver it. So there's always scope to be able to redirect that. But at the same time, we've always felt one of the real strengths of Eat Up and what we do is the fact that it's very, very specific and very simple to grasp and understand. And that's we support hungry kids who would otherwise miss out of school. So we can still work within that general guideline.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say simple. I'd say it's inspirational, especially for the people listening right here. Me, myself, it's inspirational as we'll touch back on the pandemic. So Lyndon was just speaking about putting these boxes together for the children and the families. When I was sort of mid-pandemic and I was studying at university in Newcastle, I had, I'd say a friend. So in our local club bar, we'd go down there, I think the boys quiz night, there was always a chap in the toilets, a lucky man. So he would work in the toilets after his day job, 5 till 4 a.m. in the toilets all night, handing out aftershaves and sweets, you know, for a pound or two. So that's $1 or $2 in Australia. And when the pandemic hit, he had no work, he couldn't work at all. And I messaged him to check up because he's shown me that his wife is very proud of his family. And I reached out to him. I said, "Is everything okay? Pandemic. I know he's working in the toilets at our local." It's, "No, sorry, I'm not doing tea grade. I've got no income coming in." Now the government wasn't helping him because they were only paying out full time workers there 80% of the wage. So I took it on myself to get as much cash as I could, and I ordered. Well, that friend knew because he was driving at the time because no one was allowed out of the houses. To get some food together. We got veg, we got pastas, we got sauces, a bit of protein, a bit of chicken, and my friend handed them into his house. And honestly, when I say I've never seen anybody as brave for my life, it was amazing to see. And for me, that's just on a tiny scale. And I can see what you're doing is that, but in a huge sort of more reachable way. So for me, that was very rewarding. And it's probably one of the best things I've ever done to make myself feel better.
Yeah.
And like I say, I speak with him all the time, EJ Duwando. He's from Nigeria. He's a great guy. And for me, it's just that giving back is the most rewarding thing which I've done personally. And I feel like I've got a lot of sort of motivation from doing that. And that's another reason why I wanted to bring it on today, just because I can relate to what you're doing and I think it's a great initiative.
That's such an amazing story. And what an act of kindness. Like, it's those ripples I think people doing and hearing about, like I'm sure people are going to listen and sort of be blown away and inspired by that story and do something sort of similar in their own capacity where they might know someone who's in a tricky spot and help, and it really multiplies. So mate, that's well done. That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. And a lot of people listening now, you'll know the lucky man from the Holy Hope Boy in Newcastle. You'll know who he is. I'm sure you've had some Gucci after shave up in, and I'm sure you'll see him again. But he'll be wearing one of our hoodies because he's now one of our sort of main guys we're going to bring onto the podcast in the next episode. Moving from Nigeria to the UK,
yeah,
you know, these accomplishments, his struggles, he's very proud of his family. He's just graduated Newcastle University, his master's degree. And his wife's also got hers as well. And they've got all positive things to say about the UK. But for me, working in a toilet 6 hours a night, 7 days a week, dealing with all these drunk university students, that would be quite a a job I would not want to do. You know, that takes a lot of your energy, a lot of your time. And that's just why I feel like people like that need help when it's not there.
Yeah, and like, couldn't speak up, getting a master's at university is clearly on and an ex-wife on, so some amazing things coming up. And yeah, what an incredible story, like in terms of that immigrant story and ability to be able to make things happen. I can't wait to listen to that one.
Yeah, great, absolutely. And another thing for me is when you're from the UK, you'll be able to get a student loan for your course, it'll be paid for on your foundation. But being an immigrant from a different country, you have to fund it all yourself.
Yeah.
So that for me is where I could see sort of the personal side of not being able to afford to feed his kids and his wife. So three kids, two people, no jobs, no income. So that was just sort of like a short story I wanted to share with yourself.
Mm.
And moving forward then, we will talk about the accomplishments for you. So when you're doing your day-to-day, we know you left the company and you came back, what's the thing that keeps you going, motivated?
I think it's just the excitement of a possibility. Like I've always been, I think I've always sensed the most personal fulfillment in terms of being able to help people and be able to contribute. And I've always had a passion as well for whether it's startup business or I guess the entrepreneurship more broadly.
Yeah.
And being able to compare that, or combine like those two passions in a way where you're trying to use that skill set towards sort of problem solving or building things towards impacting in the sort of broader social issue area is something that really inspires me. And I've sort of worked before in other sectors, you know, whether it's advertising or in hospitality, bars and things like that. And it's, you have good fun, there's some good times, but I've always found that most fulfilling combination, you know, personally, of what gets you excited, what you're really fired up to try and be a part of is that space. I really like it and I love it really. So
and
to be able to look and see what we can do, what we can continue to do, but I guess a broader hope or aspiration for me has been potentially that EDUC would be one spoke in a much bigger wheel of social change initiatives. So I you know, hope that EDUC might be focused on feeding hungry kids, but maybe there'll be other initiatives that come to support sort of other broader issues, whether it's homelessness or climate change or Indigenous issues. Supporting here in Australia. So still certainly a lot more work to do internally with EDUC, which I can't wait for. But that's something like I've always been drawn to entrepreneurs and like seeing the skills that they have to be able to start multiple businesses and them have success to be able to aspire to maybe achieve something similar in the not-for-profit world is something more and more that I'm like, this is what I want to do. This is the pathway, like as a I guess I never thought of it as a career, but now it's like you look at the scope of your working life. Yeah, your working life and be like, I want to try and really make an impact here.
Yeah. So for me, that is people over profit. What do you think about that sort of line I put together there? People over profit.
Yeah, I think it is. But it more and more like the not-for-profit world, and I've just got a son now as well. So that sort of perspective of trying to balance like the nature of what you do at work and what you find fulfilling, but also trying to best support your family as well. It is something you've got to really balance. So it's hard. And I guess I'm still trying to find that sweet spot in terms of what's the best thing to do. But I've sort of felt personally, if you feel great, you're high, you're doing what sort of really makes you come alive, that's perhaps going to help you to become the best parent you can be in the best company. And that's a great influence at home. And maybe there could be other opportunities to earn a little bit more.
Yeah.
But maybe that starts to detract from some of the time at home. Who knows? I certainly don't begrudge either pathway in any way. People have to try and find what works best for them. I don't, you know, I think there's great careers in both, whether it's the for-profit world or the not-for-profit world. But
yeah,
that ability to be able to juggle following a passion like this, but and then also supporting your family is something you have to really sort of consider to see where that best sweet spot is. And there are great now careers in the not-for-profit world, like naturally and rightly so, the income is less than the for-profit space.
Yeah.
But to be able to really have a family that's secure and then still pursue these passions, I think is something, you know, more and more that's attainable.
Amazing.
People have proven that.
And that for me is very inspirational hearing that, especially being young myself, I know a lot of my friends have gone into these companies where they want to earn the most money possible, which is fair enough if you're young. However, they know a lot of people who have got children, very young children, and I do hear a lot as all I'm doing is going to work, and then I'm seeing my child, but work's not fulfilling for a lot of people. And with what you've just touched on there, I feel like a lot of people should sort of look at the opportunities in front of them rather than trying to chase the cash. I know the bills are on the rise, but if you're doing something you love, then you're always going to keep going and keep motivated.
And I think, like, truthfully, that's the biggest message is trying to find what you love. And if you have the good fortune to be able to do it, like, that's the best outcome, no matter what field that's in. And certainly you can be consumed by the work and have that work balance sort of flip right out just as much, maybe more so sometimes in the not-for-profit world, because it is so hard to switch off, and actually the cause is very immediate. But to be able to find that thing that you're so passionate about, that's really the key, I think, for anybody. And this, for me, is what lights my fire.
And have you ever thought about going overseas with the venture, or
potentially? We've still got more work to go in Australia yet, but it's that sort of combination of where the lunch system is, like it is here in Australia, where kids are bringing food from home. So of course in the UK and the US, it's that little bit different. But I guess from a broader context of wanting to impact in a positive sort of social way of maybe trying to learn and develop and see causes where you can contribute, or amazing organizations overseas where you can learn from them or contribute to their work, that's certainly something I see and aspire to be able to contribute to in time would be amazing.
Right. So Marcus Bashford, if you're watching this, you know how to get in touch. So how can people find you?
So we've got through our social platforms is the best way. So whether it's Eat Up Australia on Instagram, Eat Up Australia on LinkedIn, Eat Up AUS on Facebook, our website, of course, probably the best one. So eatup.org.au. Yep. Check out what we're up to if you're able to support. That would be amazing. If you just want to come and have a look, that's awesome too. We love people to connect and engage with us, and certainly really grateful for the opportunity to have more of a chat, mate, and share more about the work we're doing. And of course, from your help with the team downstairs here, whipping up all those sandwiches for us.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Like I said, for me, I want to get more people speaking, I want to get more people engaging. And I feel like LinkedIn is certainly that person who I would look up to, and someone who I would look up to for inspiration and want to share with people. So this is what we'll be doing from the future on the Chat Podcast. We'll be getting people on like LinkedIn. Maybe not as great, but we'll certainly get them on.
Even better, mate. You told me maybe a Tyson Fury episode coming up. Who knows?
Maybe.
You've got me well covered, I think.
Who knows? However, people, you know, we've got lined up. We've got boxers, we've got footballers, we've got the singers, we've got the rappers. We've got a lot of people coming on, but for me today, this is the first Australian host, and thank you very much for coming on.
Right.
Here you go.